All right. I think there are still quite a few people filing in, but we have a packed session, so I'm going to go ahead and get started. My name is Rob Howard. I'm a program manager on the Office Developer Platform team. We own the extensibility story for Office clients like Word, Excel, and PowerPoint, our servers like SharePoint and Exchange, and our services like Office 365. And today, I'm going to do the SharePoint Power Hour, which means that I'm going to jam as much content as possible about all the new developer stuff that's come out since the RTM of SharePoint 2013 into 75 minutes. We're going to do a lot of demos. They're going to be really bite-sized, not messing with extra time on business scenarios or anything like that, just technology. We're going to go as fast as we possibly can, and I promise you I will make sure that at the end of this demo you guys have all of the code that I write so you can go try it out yourself. Okay, so the agenda, we're going to start off with a really fast refresher on the app model, just to make sure everybody has a sort of stage set. In case there was any question about it, all the content today will be related to the app model, so if you were looking for full trust solutions, again, you might want to find another session for the hour. We're going to start off by talking about what's new in apps for SharePoint. So when you go create an app for SharePoint, what are all the new capabilities you want to know about and you want to make use in your apps? We're going to move on and talk about something that we're extending into and really making a first-class citizen of the ecosystem, which is building device apps and websites that use Office 365 services. And along the way, we're going to do a ton of demos over and over and over again. All right, so this is my really fast SharePoint app model refresher. It's one slide. It's in three sections. There's basically, if you're trying to distill it down as much as possible, there are three things in the SharePoint app model. The first is we have a set of cross-platform remote APIs. That green thing on the bottom there is your custom code running on your platform of choice. You can make use of some of the .NET libraries or JavaScript libraries or Silverlight libraries we have for interacting with services on SharePoint. Or you can use REST, our OData REST, to interact with the SharePoint services from any other platform directly through HTTP requests. So you got remote APIs. That's the first piece. The second piece is an authentication and authorization model that understands the identity of an application, allows the application to get access to certain facilities, certain services inside of SharePoint, and act on the user's behalf for things the user explicitly says they can do, and then take advantage of all the functionality that's inside of SharePoint from these remote locations where code's running. And the third piece is UI extensions. We've got a bunch of places within SharePoint where we allow you to plug in your custom code, whether it's running in a SharePoint app web or it's running in a remote website. We've got full page apps that you can launch into. We've got parts that you can embed inside of pages. We've got menu extensions and command extensions and ribbon extensions that you can add. But that allows you to integrate your app into the experience of SharePoint. So these are kind of the three pieces of the SharePoint app model. We'll talk about different aspects and some improvements we're making in each one of these today. But I just want to make sure we had that set down. We kind of all had a level understanding of what the SharePoint app model is. All right, so the SharePoint app model, I think a little over a year ago, November 2012, at SharePoint conference, Scott Guthrie stood on stage, did in the keynote and intro of the SharePoint app model, talked to people about it for the first time. Really, we thought about it as a brand new way to interact with SharePoint, and in particular, one that kind of got out of the way of developers and let them use whatever web technologies they wanted to build their solutions and just take advantage of SharePoint's functionality through services. And one of the most critical things about this model is that it allows people to build solutions that work both in the cloud and on premises. Since then, we've had a ton of momentum around the app model. We have almost 2 billion monthly API calls just in Office 365. That doesn't even include the server products. We have major ISVs like DocuSign, Intex, AvePoint, K2, and a ton of others building apps in the store and distributing apps directly to customers. And we have a bunch of customers from small customers to huge enterprise customers building internal corporate apps and making use of them in their day-to-day business. Part of that's a bunch of new apps covering new scenarios that weren't even possible with a fully trusted model before. And in a lot of cases, people are now converting fully trusted code to cloud app model solutions in order to have more flexible ways to run it, to better take advantage of web technologies, and to be able to run their solutions both on premises and in the cloud and in hybrid environments. So I want to call out one session here that if you're interested in especially this last thing, the conversion of fully trusted code solutions to cloud app model solutions, Steve Walker and Vesa Yuvovin, sorry if I butchered your name, Vesa, are doing a session later this week They have a ton of experience in MCS building solutions on top of SharePoint, and they're going to be talking about a bunch of real-world customer examples where enterprise customers are taking Fully Trust code that they have written and have had deployed in business today and re-implementing them on the Cloud App Model. So I highly recommend checking that one out. So we've got a lot of momentum, but there's a bunch more work that we need to do. In particular, we need to do continuous improvement on the model itself. It was a V1. We thought it was a really good V1, but there's a lot of work that we can continue doing. We're doing updates to the service, to Office 365, every couple of weeks. There's new functionality coming there all the time. On premises, we're even adding a bunch of new functionality around the Cloud App Model through CUs and on a regular basis there. So I'll talk about some of that in a minute. And as a result, we're updating the client redistributables almost every quarter in order to expose this new functionality to remote code. In addition to new functionality, we need a lot more guidance and samples. Today, we're actually announcing and launching the first solution pack, which is a new way that we're doing documentation that's very scenario-oriented. We've noticed that there's a bunch of customers who want to do very similar things. In particular, this one's on site provisioning and site branding, having a custom application to do those things. It's a very common request from large customers. And today, we're releasing a solution pack that contains documentation, sample code, and complete working applications that show you how to do those scenarios. There's a link here in the deck. I'll click on it. You can actually go and check it out on Microsoft.com, download the SharePoint 2013 and SharePoint Online Solution Pack for Branding and Site Provisioning. Like I said, this is for a Cloud App Model-based way to do solutions or to do site provisioning and branding that works both on-prem and online. So I highly recommend you check it out. We have a bunch more solution packs on the way for a lot more scenarios. We're kind of going in popularity order and making sure we have very robust documentation that's oriented around that scenario. And part of what's feeding that is a new open source project that we just made public yesterday called App Model Samples that folks like Steve and Vesta and a bunch of other folks have been driving and putting a bunch of content into that is the basis for a lot of the sample code that we're using in these solution packs and has a bunch of new stuff in there that's not yet in solution packs. But it's a great way for you to take a look at what other folks are doing in their environments and contribute things that you've been doing to that community as well. In addition, today, if you saw the developer keynote before, and I'll talk about a bunch here, we're starting the process of unveiling a bunch of preview features. These features will be things that are in O365 only at first. We'll put them out there for feedback to get developers to play around with them, to let us know how they feel about them. Eventually, we'll make them generally available when we feel like they're solid enough and people like them enough. Eventually, after they've been in the service and generally available and we have a major release of the on-prem server product, we'll make sure they work in the server too, so they'll get there as well. And that's going to be the basis for a bunch of the stuff we talk about today is brand new preview functionality. So when I say preview functionality, that's what I'm talking about. It's stuff we want feedback on. It's not stuff that's yet ready for you to build production things on, mostly because we'll learn a lot from your feedback and we may change it in a way that could break your solutions. We definitely want you to check it out and let us know how it works. This is that Office App Model CodePlex project I was talking about, so if you want to check this out, this is that open source code project that has a bunch of samples. They cover a couple dozen different scenarios, doing all kinds of really clever stuff with remote applications in the app model, interacting with our services, so I highly recommend you check that out. I mentioned we want feedback on the preview features. We want feedback on the app model in general. Big question is, how do you do that? We're actually saying that the best way to do that now, we really want it all in one place, is we have a user voice site, officespapps.uservoice.com, I think it is, or officespdev.uservoice.com. I can click on it. Go there, officespdev.uservoice.com, add your feature suggestions. We've actually done a bunch of things that are on this list already. I think they talked about that in the developer keynote. When you're using a preview feature, you have feedback about it, throw it up there. If there's something that's missing from the model, an API that's not in the CSOM that you want, throw it up there. We're watching it. We're listening to it. That's a list that we're working from. If you have questions, go to Stack Overflow. We're really focusing our efforts on answering questions in one place. Stack Overflow is the place to go. We've got two tags that we're watching there really closely, MS-Office if you're doing Office development and SharePoint if you're doing SharePoint development. And finally, visit dev.office.com for the latest tools and docs. So if you're looking for updates for the tools or documentation or anything we're talking about here today, they just did a refresh. They just did a new release of dev.office.com today. So you can go and check out the new site and see all the new functionality there. And when you're looking for things in the future about new preview functionality or preview functionality that we're making generally available, We'll make that all very clear on blogs.msdn.com/b/office apps. If you go there, this is the blog where we announce all these features. A bunch of the stuff that you see this week, we'll have blog posts on there that really detail out the functionality. And this is where we'll continue to release those blog posts to tell you about future things that happen after the conference. Okay, so that's my intro. One other slide, you guys saw this already in the developer keynote. I just wanted to tell you kind of what we're going to talk about. Today we're going to talk about all of these things. First, I want to set a little bit of context and kind of split out that top row. So I think of it as there being kind of two categories of things for this talk in particular. There's these contextual apps. Here you see Outlook, and embedded in that Outlook experience, there is a custom application there that's showing some charts. This is a contextual app that's right in context in the office experience. It's right where people are getting work done. There's a lot of value that it gets just from being there, but also from understanding the context of the user's work, it can do richer things. So those are contextual apps. Things like Apps for Office and SharePoint are in that category. These are things that you acquire from the Office Store or the organizational catalog, and they extend the experience of Office and SharePoint. In order to build them, we've got templates in Visual Studio that allow you to do just very simple file new app for SharePoint, file new app for Office. This other category we kind of did before, but in really painful ways, and we'll talk about that in a minute, and that is device apps and websites. And we're really doing a bunch of stuff and announcing a bunch of stuff today that's all about making this a much better experience. So these are things that you're going to browse to directly, websites that you can just get to on the web, device apps that you can download from the iTunes Store or the Android Store or from the Windows Store. And they connect to Office 365 through OAuth and REST APIs. And we have tools that we'll talk about a little bit later today for building them in Visual Studio. And we'll talk about some SDKs we have for building them on non-Windows platforms. So we're going to start off. The next section, we're going to talk about contextual experiences, app for SharePoint. And then the last half, we're going to talk about device apps and websites. All right, how am I doing on time? Pretty good. All right, so what's new in apps for SharePoint? So the first thing I want to talk about is our new SharePoint Remote API. So we've been looking at the feedback that people have. We've been looking at that scenario-oriented documentation, especially things around site provisioning and branding first. And we've gone and added a bunch of functionality in the right places in order to make those scenarios work end-to-end. So for example, in the August CU and on-prem, we added a bunch of functionality to make the CSOM calls for remote site provisioning work. So that works in on-prem and online equally well. We have, and today we're updating, or yesterday, I guess, we're updating the client components for SharePoint Server to include all the functionality that's in SP1 of SharePoint Server. So all the new things that we've added there between RTM and now are now available through the Redist as well. In addition, we're also releasing a new client component pack for SharePoint Online. This includes all the stuff that's available on-prem. It'll work against on-prem as well, but it also includes some additional things that are only right now available in SharePoint Online. So this is the latest and greatest. If you only want to work on-prem and you want to make sure your scenario works in both places, just use the first one. If you want the latest and greatest stuff and you want to see the new stuff coming hot off the press, then check out the second one. And both now include portable libraries for use in Windows Store apps, which is a brand new feature and a bunch of people have been asking for a long time. So here's just a few new APIs that are available there. I won't go through them all in detail. The last thing that I'll mention again is just this site provisioning and branding solution pack. And with that, I'm going to switch to my first demo, which is really going to be almost the entire rest of the talk, and that is a custom site provisioning solution. So I'm going to switch over my dev box. Everybody see that? Okay. So like I said, we're going to do a bunch of demos here. I've actually got 5 instances of Visual Studio. I've got Eclipse open. I don't know if you guys have seen the latest work that the Visual Studio team has done, but if you install Visual Studio 2013, the performance is spectacular. Our friends in Visual Studio did a great job. I can have 5 open, and it's totally painless. I have right here a project. It's just a brand new SharePoint provider-hosted project. It's going against an Office 365 site. I haven't done anything other than just create the site. And what I'm going to do is create a remote application. It's going to run in IIS. And it's going to call into SharePoint and create a custom site inside of SharePoint Online. So this is the most basic scenario you can possibly do for custom site provisioning. The branding pack has a bunch of more advanced scenarios, things like remote event receivers and workflows tied to it and everything like that. So the first thing I'm going to do is go into the app manifest, go into permissions, and allow it to make app-only calls, because generally the people who go to this app won't have permission to do site collection provisioning. So I want to make sure that the app is doing it for them. And then I need to make sure that the app has enough permissions. So I'm going to give it tenant write permissions, which is what you need to go create site collections in a tenant. So So I got that done. Now I'm going to go and create the simplest possible site provisioning page ever. So I'm going to go to my default.aspx page, and I'm going to type in site name, and I'm going to drop on a text box, and go to properties and call it site name. And then I'm going to go to site owner. And this is the user who's going to be the site collection administrator for it. Ideally, I would want to have kind of a people picker experience, but man, we don't have anything like that. TB. So I'm going to just do a text box here, call it site owner. And then I'm going to create a button to create the site. And call that create site. I'm just going to double click on the button to implement its handler. I'm going to get rid of this boilerplate code that just outputs the web name. And I'm going to write my code. So the first thing I need to do is I'll go to create an app only access token. So for those of you who aren't aware, we have two ways to interact with SharePoint remotely. There's app plus user, which is an action directly on behalf of the user. And both the app and the user have to have permission to do that. In this case, most users won't have permission to create new site collections, so I want an app-only token. I'm going to do it against the tenant administration URL for my tenant, which is the one where I go create these site collections. Here's my tenant administration URL. Here's my app-only access token that I'm creating. Next, I'm going to set some site creation properties. So this is an object site creation properties that's part of the new tenant administration DLL that's now in the redist for both on-prem and online. So I need to add a reference there. I'm going to go to add references. You see, I've got in my recent list, the assembly is called microsoft.online.sharepoint.client.tenant. But don't be fooled by the name. It works both on-prem and online. It's just a bad name. I'm going to hit OK. And then I'm going to resolve the reference. So now you can see my site creation properties are there. I can specify what's the URL where I want to create it, where I'm going to use the value in the text box. I can specify the site owner, the template, the title, the storage, the time zone, the user code warning, all that kind of stuff. And then the last piece is just a couple lines to actually create the site. So I'm going to go ahead and publish that while that's going. I'm creating a client context. I'm using the tenant administration site URL and the app-only access token that I created. I'm creating a new tenant from that client context and calling create site on that tenant and then calling execute query. So I'm going to log in. It's going to launch my app. I have to give it trust. I have to tell it I'm going to allow it to edit and delete items in all site collections across the tenant. Now I've got my app. I'll say demo site, let's do 37. Probably didn't do that yet. rob@junction.onmicrosoft. This is really a pain to type out that whole email address. So I'm going to hit create site. And while that's running, I'm going to go over to the manage site collection UI for that same tenant and just hit refresh. And you'll see that I've got demo site 37 creating from that remote application running in IIS. Is that cool? Okay. Awesome. So I'm going to go ahead and stop that, and I'm going to go back to the slides real quick. Like I said, super simple demo, really fast, just showing you the principle. If you want to learn more, go check out Vesa and Steve's session. They'll talk a lot about site provisioning. Go check out those app model samples. They've got a lot of really advanced stuff built on that principle. All right, so the next thing I want to talk about is licensing in the SharePoint store. Man, we support everything. We've got free, we've got trialed, we've got paid. If you distribute through the store, we take a 20% cut. If you distribute outside of the store, which is totally allowed, there's nothing against that. You can distribute through the corporate catalog directly to your customers, and then we won't take anything. There's per seat prices. You can also set a threshold after which you get a site license. We support everything. There's absolutely nothing missing. Except the one thing that everybody really wants in this cloud world, which is subscriptions, which are now available. They weren't available at RTM, but they're available both online and on-prem. SharePoint subscriptions are in the store. I'll just show you, just to prove it, a really quick demo of a couple of sites. It'll take 2 minutes. I've got my seller dashboard open here. You can see I've got an app here. It's in draft mode. It's $9.99 a perpetual license. If I go to my seller dashboard, I'm on my my details for the app. Next, go to pricing. And I have, this app will be sold as a subscription. I can set the subscription price. I can set a price threshold to say, after this many users, it's a site license, so it doesn't add any more cost. And I can still support trial, and I can save that all as a draft. And you can see things already in the store that support this model as well. So if I go over here, for example, to education, you can see Squirm Player and Visual SP Help System are both already using subscriptions. So we've got subscriptions in the store. The fact that you've got to maintain these websites in order to have services that customers can continue to interact with, you now have a subscription model as a way to cover that cost in perpetuity. All right. Back to the slides. Okay, now let's talk about the provider-hosted app UI that we just saw. Remember that site provisioning thing that we just created? This is a symptom of a bunch of things in provider-hosted apps. It's really cool that I can just write .NET code. I don't have to mess with all the intricacies of writing SharePoint. But man, when I do things like I want to pick a user or when I want to display a list, it becomes very difficult to do in these provider-hosted apps because I just have ASP.NET controls. I don't have the SharePoint things that are there. So today we're announcing Office Web Widgets. This is one of those preview features that I was talking about. And it's a NuGet package that's actually available now. I'll show you exactly how to get it in Visual Studio in just a second. They're HTML and JavaScript UI controls, so they allow you to quickly integrate them into any web project, whether it's built on ASP.NET or PHP or Node.js. And they even support JS event registration, so they're not just these sort of dumb pieces that sit in your code and allow you to have some UI. They actually allow you to drive the business application, the logic in your business application. Today we support two things, the People Picker, and the People Picker has a bunch of cool features. It supports multi-selection, has an MRU list, so it shows, tracks the things that you've selected most recently in your browser local storage. It has a custom placeholder text, so you can set what you want in the UI for people to see when they click on it. The list view is another one we support, which allows you to point at a list in the host web of the application that you've been deployed to. And we support sort, selection, and view and editing of the items there. Again, these are preview features. We'd encourage you to go check them out. Try them out in your applications, see what you can build with them, see what features are missing, see what things are broken, and provide us the feedback on user voice. So I'm going to do a quick demo of just taking the Office Web Widget and adding it into my site provisioning solution. So I'm going to go back to site provisioning, and I'm going to go and get the NuGet package. All I do is I right-click on the site provisioning demo web, and I say Manage NuGet Packages. I'm going to search for Office. And sadly, it's not at the top of the list of most downloaded right now. After today, I expect it to be, so everybody go download it so it can be at the top of the list. If you go by publish date, it'll be right up here, Office Web Widgets Experimental. Hit install, I accept. And already I've got these CSS files. You can see Office Controls CSS and a bunch of JS files, Office Controls, Office List View, Office Controls People Picker added into my project and ready to use. I'm just going to go right into my, unpin a couple of these guys. I'm going to go right into my default.aspx page, go into the source, and I'm going to start adding that in. It's a pretty quick process. I'm going to start by saying I want to add in the references to those script files. So I'm going to add in a reference to request executor. This is our cross-domain library. These controls have a dependency on that library. And I'm going to add in a reference to the controls.js file and the controls people picker.js file, as well as the CSS file. So now I've got the references in there. Next thing I want to do is I actually want to, instead of this ASP.NET text box, I want to use my people picker. So I'm going to add in that thing. You can see the markup's pretty simple. It's just a div. It's got an ID on it. But the important thing that makes it a control is this data-office-control markup, where I say office.controls.peoplePicker in order to say that this is going to be a people picker. And then I go into the body or in some other load method. If I were using jQuery, I could just do $ready. And I'm going to go people picker and add in a body on load that's going to initialize the controls runtime and ask it to go and render all the controls, which will tell it to go through the page, find all the ones with that data-office-control attribute on it, and go and make them controls. So I've got that thing integrated there. The next thing I want to do actually is hide this guy, because I don't want that ASP.NET control to show, but I still need it to read it from my .NET code. So I'm going to put a div around it. And I'm going to put a style on it, display none. So I won't see that guy anymore. And then there is one other thing that's important to be aware of. So this control has a dependency on the cross-domain library, like I said. And the cross-domain library needs an app web to run. And if you want to provide that feedback on user voice, I think it is something that we should fix. So feel free to go and up that one. I'm going to go and add an element to this app web, to the app project. I'm just going to add an empty element here. And when I add the empty element, that just forces VS to create this package. So there's an app web there. I'm not actually going to use it for anything. I can even go and delete the feature. I can go and delete the element. The package stays around. That's all I really wanted. So now I've got my package. And so now I can hit F5. Oh, there is actually one other. Oh, no, I'm good. Okay. So now I'm going to hit F5. And this is going to deploy the thing. This deployment will take a little bit longer because I added that app web, so I'll have to uninstall it and then reinstall it. So I'm going to log in again and give it trust again. Then you'll see I've got my site name here. I've got my people picker. So now I can now select people. That's great. Now I've got some UI that knows that I've selected this thing. But nothing else on the page knows that I've selected this thing. Just having a people picker doesn't help much. I actually want to be able to take that value and do something with it. So I'm going to go back into Visual Studio. I'm going to keep it running, because Visual Studio is super smart about knowing when I can and can't do things when it's running. And I'm just going to add some things to the markup of this page. In particular, I'm going to first add some simple options. So Office controls support this notion of data-office-options, which is just a JSON-looking syntax that allows you to say, hey, here's some options I want to specify in the control. Here I'm just going to say that the custom placeholder I want in that text box says, please choose an owner for your site collection. And then the second thing I want to do is I want to make sure that when this value changes, that something in the page knows and updates that ASP.NET control. So I'm going to add in another option here, which is an onChange handler. I'm going to point at a JavaScript function called handlePeoplePickerChange. And then I'm going to make site owner and change its client ID mode to static, so that the script knows how to access it. That way, I can actually use that site owner ID from JavaScript as well. And the last thing I'm going to do is go to people pick, is add in the JavaScript function to actually handle that change. So what you'll see is this thing's going to get called. It's going to get a set of arguments. And that set of arguments includes a selected items property, which is all the people that are in that people picker control. And if there is somebody selected, then what I want to do is set that the dot value property of that site owner control to be the user's email. So I can get to their email, I can get to their display name, I can get to their user ID, I can get to a bunch of different properties of the selected user, all very useful stuff. I can hit save. I can go back here. You notice I didn't have to redeploy. Visual Studio was all smart about that. I'll do test site again. We'll pick somebody, hit create site, and we'll go back and just make sure you can see test site again provisioning there too. And this time it'll be set to the owner of the person I picked with the people picker. So here you go, really quick integration of the Office web widgets into a project. Okay, I gotta go really fast. Man, I'm slowing down. Just to talk a little bit about our roadmap there. So the preview includes today, both the people picker and the list view. They're available via the NuGet package today. Go download it, check it out. Make sure that when you search for Office, that's the top thing on the list, please. I'm expecting all of you guys to do it. There's enough people in this room to make it happen. We're also working on more web widgets. We want a bunch of these things. There's a bunch of pieces of SharePoint and Office 365 UI that are interesting things to be able to embed in your provider-hosted apps, and so we're going to keep working on those. And in the future, we actually want to move from a model where we're developing all these things and we're doing them in-house in a closed-source way to an open-source project so that you guys can get your hands on the source code and even contribute to it, find bugs, add new features, and make contributions that way. So this is the roadmap for Office Web Widgets going forward. Just wanted to tell you guys about that as well as let you see the new feature. All right, so now I'm going to switch gears and I'm going to talk about something that's a future. which is like a preview, except you can't even see it yet. This one in particular is in our dog food environments, and it'll show up in the production service pretty soon. And that's workflow apps. Today, you can include workflow in apps, but they can really only interact with the content inside the app. So it's kind of a part of your app's logic. But workflow isn't a way to sort of redistribute logic to a bunch of different sites. You can't use apps as the model for that. So this feature actually allows you to do it. It allows you to take workflows, embed them inside of an app, and then use those workflows in the host web content. So when you install the app inside of a site, you can then associate that workflow with document libraries inside of that site. And as a result, you can then leverage all the app model capabilities around lifecycle, things like installation and upgrade, deploying it out to a bunch of sites through these custom solutions. And we allow you then to take those packages, those app packages, even ones including workflow, and publish them in the store and deploy them through the corporate catalog so that you can distribute your solutions that include workflow through the store. Yeah, it's pretty cool. I heard somebody clapping. I like that. Like I said, this is available today in our dog food environments, and it'll be available in all Office 365 tenants by the end of March. So I'll do a really quick demo just to make sure you know what I'm talking about there. This one's tricky because I have to remember to make sure and log into the dog food environment. So I'm going to hit stop. I usually forget. So I'm going to go into this workflow app. Again, this is just a brand new project. I just didn't want you to have to wade through it. It's a SharePoint hosted project in this case. I'm just going to right click and do add, new item. I'm going to choose workflow, and this is going to be the least interesting workflow you've ever seen. I'm going to call it workflow from app. I'm going to make it a list workflow so that I can associate it with lists in the parent site. And I don't want to actually associate it with any current libraries because I want to associate it with libraries that are part of the host site where I install the app. So I'm going to go ahead and create the workflow. Because I'm associating this workflow with libraries from the parent site, I also want to go and give the app access to the parent site. So I'm going to go into permissions, and I'm going to say that this app needs web.manage, so it can do things like attach to the parent site's list. And then I'm going to go in here into this workflow and do the simplest thing I can possibly imagine that's a valid workflow, which is just create a single task, drop it on here, and I'm going to log into this dog food tenant. Because I'm realizing that in order to do that simple workflow, I need to know the login name of this user. So I'm actually going to use our API here because I forgot to copy that down. I'm going to say go into this dog food tenant API/web/current user/login name. Just use our REST APIs. These are the ones everybody already knows about. And I'm going to grab this login name and just hard code that I want to associate this workflow. My resolution is too big, apparently. With this login name and hard code it, I'll say workflow task. I'll make it really simple. And then there's a little switch here that I'm going to use to say that instead of being a workflow that's for the app, the workflow is actually integrated with the app. Then I'm going to build it. And I'm going to, if it succeeds, it succeeded. I'm going to deploy it. So it'll take just a second to deploy. It's going to deploy that app into that dog food site that I was just on. It's going to ask for permissions for that app. So it's going to take, in this case, it's going to ask for web.manage. It's going to prompt me for that. And then I'm going to show you how I can associate it. It's going to be a login problem here, too, because I'm switching between dog food and production environments. So you'll have to bear with me for a second while I do a second login. You know what? Because we are short on time, I will come back and do the end of that demo when we finish the slides for this next demo. So I'm going to go here to main. I want to make sure you guys don't get gypped on your demos. So. So pretend like you just saw the basic workflow demo. Tim McConnell is doing a session all about what's new in workflow, including this stuff and a bunch of stuff related to content type associations and a bunch of other really cool features. I highly recommend you check out that if you're interested in workflow. And we're also going to introduce a new future feature today. You saw this, I think, earlier in the dev keynote, the ability to register a custom file extension. So this allows your apps to handle file extensions that you have special logic for, including defining icons, defining the new file experience, defining previews in the callouts like the WAX do when you want to see a Word document in that callout, and opening in a custom app. And it's supported both for OneDrive for Business and for SharePoint DocLibs in any site. So I'm going to go ahead and do a demo of creating the custom file extension app that you saw earlier. And when I switch over, I'm first going to show you the end of this demo. So this is the workflow demo, my workflow app deployed. If I go to Documents, and I go to the library, dog food sites are slower too, so. Did I deploy in the right place? Oh, no, I'm in the wrong site. Sorry about that. I go to Documents. This is the site where I deployed that app. I can go to the library. I can go to Workflow Settings and add a workflow. And you'll see Workflow App Demo is there as a choice. I can choose Workflow App Demo, and any of the workflows that are inside of it are now available for me to associate directly with the content in my host web. So now you can build workflows, build that business logic, and sell that business logic in the store, or distribute that business logic to people in your corporation through apps. All right, so that's that demo. So I'm also going to do this custom file type demo. The custom file type demo, I think you guys saw earlier, the demo where you saw custom SVG files being rendered inside of document libraries. I'm actually going to show you how that was built. So I'm going to go really fast on this one. I've got, a SharePoint provider-hosted app, again, with nothing up my sleeve. There's nothing in here beforehand. This thing is going to interact with libraries that are in the host web. So I need to give it access. So I'm going to say I want to give it web write access so it can read and write those files. Again, you guys can't actually do this at home yet. This is a future feature. Just want to make sure that that one's really clear. Just want to talk to you guys about what we're doing next. And all I'm going to do is I'm going to add in, because this is a future feature, Visual Studio doesn't have support for it yet. So I'm going to hack something together. The file item custom action is how you add a little menu onto the document libraries as well. The markup's actually almost identical. So I'm going to say file type custom action, and I'm going to use that thing in order to create it. It's going to even give me a little wizard and say, I want to register on the host web, I want to register it by list template, I want to register it on the document library template. I'll call it preview, give it a URL. It's going to go and create this XML for me. Almost all the XML is actually right. The registration is a list. The registration ID is the document template for the document library, which is 101. This location isn't quite right. I'll show you what that is in a second. But the sequence and the title are. So I'm actually going to go in here, and I'm going to show you the markup that we have right now. So this is the preview markup for doing a custom file type. We've got an extension here, which is the DRW, the drawing file, which is these SVG files. I'm telling it which path I want to use for the icon that it should show. And then I'm defining an open URL and a preview URL, which are the default.aspx and a preview.html page I'm about to go create. I'm going to save that thing. I'm going to go and copy this icon into the future. And I'm going to remember to change this property to element file. That makes sure that we include it in the solution when we're done. We won't have to do that in the final tools, but for now. And then I'm going to add the preview HTML page. And I'm not going to do the whole app, but I will do the preview app all the way. I want to make sure we have enough time for the rest of the demos. So I'm just going to go preview.html. If I open preview HTML, there are a few custom file types. There's a few references I want in the head. So I want to reference the app CSS so I can have a layout for how the preview shows up. I want to reference ASP.NET Ajax, and I want to reference jQuery and a preview JS file that I'm going to write in just a second. And then in the body, I'm just going to put some HTML structure there for us to put the actual preview in. So this preview div is where the SVG is going to land. Then I'm going to go into app.css. I have a little snippet problem here. Bear with me just a moment. VS Dev did an awesome job on perf. The snippet management thing is still a little lame. Okay, custom file type. I just have a bunch of CSS that's going to style how it's going to show up in the page. It's nothing fancy, just setting it up. So I have a little frame on the bottom and a border on the bottom. And then I'm going to go and add a script, that preview.js script. And preview.js is going to do two simple things. One is, you saw a bunch of tokens in the URL. One of those was actually passing the item URL that I'm getting the preview for. So I want to be able to read that from the query string. So I'm going to have just some boilerplate code here for parsing the query string. And then a relatively straightforward function, a relatively straightforward function for actually loading that SVG file from the library. So all it's going to do is, it's going to grab the host web URL, the app web URL, and the item URL from the query string. It's going to make an Ajax call to the app web URL, use this app context site thing to get to the host web URL, and it's going to get a file by a server relative URL that is at the item URL I pulled out of the query string, and it's going to use dollar value to actually grab the bytes of the file and pull it down. And then it's going to take the bytes of the file on success, and it's going to actually just set them right into inner HTML, because SVG can be rendered natively in the browser by IE9. So I'm going to hit save. So because this one's even more preview than the workflow one, it's not even in a dog food environment. It's actually in a pre-production environment that is only on like a developer's box under their desk somewhere. So we're really going to cross our fingers on this one and hope that the demo gods are shining on us. I'm going to show you the site that I'm going to deploy to. And this site just has one really simple .drw file, and it's just an SVG. You guys probably saw this one in the earlier demo. It's actually the one that we're actually deploying this to. We're all crossing our fingers, remember. It's going communicating with a SharePoint site over in Redmond, so it may take just a second. I have to let it read and write things in the parent site. I'm going to say trust it. Okay, it installed. So I'm going to go back over here to this library, and we're all going to cross our fingers. Oh. So I deploy it to the right site. We'll try for just a second. Here, I know one other thing to try. Oh, I did. Oh, man. You guys are awesome. You're really watching these demos, I can tell. You're right. I kept the location of edit control block. Thank you. So I need to change that to file extension definition. And I'm actually going to deploy to a different site just to make sure. Dev site 3. And I'm going to hit deploy. And I'm going to go browse to that one. All right, so I've got another fresh site here. I've got four or five of these lined up in case something goes wrong. So. There were deployment errors. Oh, it's not actually a dev site. OK, we're going to go back to site 2. I don't have four or five of these lined up. We're going to make sure and uninstall this thing first. Give it just a second. Uninstall succeeded. We're going to install it again. Everybody's crossing their fingers, right? Thank you. Legs too. Awesome. Perfect. Okay, we're going to trust it. And then we're going to go and refresh this page. Oh, I'm on DevSite 3 again. DevSite 2. Ah! Failure again. Okay. Well, you'll just have to believe me on that one. Thanks for the applause anyway. I appreciate it. Oh, wait, no, we're good. Hey. The power of control F5. Now, does this actually work? Hey! All right, now we took forever on that one. I'm glad I got some good applause out of it, so. All right, and there's one session that I want to talk about on that one. This really great presenter will be talking tomorrow about OneDrive extensibility. It's actually me. I'm talking tomorrow at 10:45 all about how to extend OneDrive, do custom provisioning in OneDrive, deploy apps in OneDrive, build Android things that connect to OneDrive. So if you want to check out that presentation, see more about this custom file type thing, there'll be some overlap from what we talk about here, but we'll do a bunch of new stuff too. So if you're interested in OneDrive for Business, check that out tomorrow. One last thing about apps for SharePoint that I want to talk about that I'm not going to demo because there's just not enough time and you already saw it in the keynote is the Cloud Business App Template in Visual Studio. The Cloud Business App Template in Visual Studio is a new template. It's like the App for SharePoint template in that it develops an app for SharePoint, but it's really focused on rapidly developing applications that connect to line of business systems and SharePoint and kind of connect those pieces of information together into really valuable experiences really quickly. So this is a really cool infrastructure. It's a really cool new project type. And Steve Lasker is doing a session, I think it's tomorrow. I think it actually might conflict with mine. It's at the same time, so you're going to have to choose. On developing Office 365 cloud business apps with that new template. And it's a very cool thing, despite the fact that it's the same time as my session. I also recommend checking that one out. Okay, so I'm done with apps for SharePoint. We're going to move on to talk about device and website apps. And I'm going to show this screen. These are a bunch of actual device apps, some of which were produced by Microsoft, that are actually in stores today for interacting with Office 365. And I show these not because I'm ragging on the people who built them. I'm actually really impressed that people could make it work, because it's a pain to actually make an app connect to Office 365, do the auth, pretend to be a web page, and get cookies and all kinds of crazy stuff like that, figure out the URL where your site is. But there's even a bunch of problems with this. So if you see all these things, they're doing things like they're actually in the app asking you for a username and password. They're in the app asking you, where is the URL where your OneDrive is? So you can see that down there. There's a bunch of problems with that, just security problems in that they're actually taking your username and password. They're then having to store it in a secure way, which is a really tough thing to do, especially on a device application. They don't support things like multi-factor authentication or federated auth. They have to ask you where your URL is, which is really pain to type in and remember or copy-paste from somewhere, especially on a phone or something like that. So there's a bunch of problems with the way that we build device apps today when they connect to Office 365. So the next several things I'm going to announce are really all about making this experience awesome. Device apps and websites connecting to Office 365. The first thing I'm going to talk about is the ability to use Azure Active Directory auth for Office 365. So Azure Active Directory has a really spectacular OAuth infrastructure for defining applications. I'll walk you through it in just a second. Allows you to define an application to manage the security of that application within your infrastructure. And they are today releasing in preview the capability to use that to connect to other services like SharePoint and Exchange. And it provides the user with a single auth flow across Azure AD Graph, Exchange, and SharePoint. You can see this thing on the right-hand side. I don't know if you can actually read it, but it's a single prompt here. I'll show you this live in just a second. That's saying enable single sign-on and read user profiles, have control of users' calendars, send mail as a user, and read items in all SharePoint site collections. So you're doing that all in one go. The user's doing it one time. They're not signing into your application. We support device apps. We support websites. We support admin and user consent. This is a secure protocol. It uses OAuth 2.0. We're not capturing any user credentials in the website or the device app. We're supporting fine-grained permissions, so it's not, hey, the app can do anything you can do because it has your username and password. It's the app can only do the things that it explicitly asks permission to do. And we support things through this flow like multi-factor authentication, which is a feature in Office 365 that's becoming more and more popular with businesses for security reasons. And federated sign-in, if you've got on-prem ADFS and you want to sign in through that. That's what we do at Microsoft. A bunch of other customers do the same. That doesn't work very well on device apps today. And then it also supports long-term access through refresh tokens. So rather than having to store a credential, I actually store this refresh token, and without asking the user for access, as long as my app's access hasn't been revoked, I can continue to access the service on their behalf. I don't have to have a login or a prompt every time I start this application. So it's really an ideal way to interact and authenticate to Office 365 services. And I'm actually not going to demo an app right now. I'm going to demo you the portal real quick, and I'll demo you an app in just a second that does all this stuff together. So I'm going to go over here. I don't think I actually have one open. My notes said to open one, but I didn't listen to myself. Let me close this. The first thing I want to do, actually, is this part is a little bit confusing. And I want to straighten it out real quick. We're going to make it better, I promise. But if I go to manage.windowsazure.com with my Office 365 ID. So this is the Azure portal. If you haven't used Azure before, it's the one place where you go to manage all of your stuff. Well, I'm already signed into a private window. Let me sign out of all these windows. If you go to manage.windowsazure.com and you sign in with an account that doesn't have a subscription, and I've very cleverly named this account No Subscription, this is an Office 365 account. I haven't done anything to go create a subscription. If you do this today, you're going to get this screen, which kind of looks like an error screen. Says we're unable to find any Azure subscription for you, and it's kind of a bummer, and it can kind of be a roadblock, and we've seen a lot of people hit this and sort of turn away and say, I'm done. When you hit this, keep going. There's a link here that says sign up for Azure. If you click on that, it's going to ask you for a bunch of extra information. It's going to ask you for a credit card. I know it's a bummer. We're going to make it better. But you can sign up for a pay-as-you-go subscription, and the directory is free, so there's nothing to pay for. So go through that. You'll get a portal. You'll be able to do a bunch of really cool stuff if you go through it. And I promise we'll make this better as we get further along and we get toward general availability. So now I'm going to go in with an actual user that I've already done that with so you can see my actual portal. So this is the Windows Azure portal. You can see all my items here. I don't have very many items in this particular tenant. I have two websites, which we'll talk about in a minute, and I have a directory. And this is actually my Office 365 directory. When I signed up for Office 365, it actually went into Azure Active Directory, and it created a tenant for me. I can't go manage it in Azure until I have a subscription, but you can actually see the tenant here. And when I click on Rob's Developer Tenant, which is the name of the organization in Office 365 that I created, I can actually see things like the users. So these are the users that I created in Office 365 that are stored in the Active Directory tenant. And I can see groups, but I can also see applications. And applications is what I was talking about when I said they have a great infrastructure for doing OAuth here. When you log into this the first time, you're going to see Office 365 SharePoint Online, and hopefully you're going to see Office 365 Exchange Online very soon here when they fix this name. But you won't see any of these other things. You can go and then create your own applications. Add an application my org is developing. You can define your name. You can pick whether you want a web application or a native client application. You can put in the redirect URI, and we'll talk about how you figure out all that stuff in just a second. We'll go through it in gross detail. But I'm going to go to a simple one that's already created. This is called Discovery Sample, sort of giving away the next feature we'll talk about. But Discovery Sample is a really simple native device application. If I click on Configure, I can see the client ID that it's going to use for OAuth. I can see the redirect URLs and add more redirect URLs. This is a device redirect URL for those of you who aren't familiar with Windows apps. MS-app is the protocol it uses for addressing devices on items on your device. And this piece is the new piece of UI that won't be in your tenant right now, but by the end of the week, it will be in all Azure tenants. And this is permissions to other applications. So right now, if you go there, you'll be able to create an application that can talk to Azure AD's graph and get user profile information. What you'll see here is I can actually select other apps like SharePoint Online and Exchange Online here. When I select one of those, you'll get awesome permissions like read items in all site collections, or read users' files, or edit and delete users' files, or read users' contacts and calendars, and send mail as a user, and read users' mail. All these things are available to applications that register through this Azure Active Directory infrastructure. So this is my Discovery app. Keep this in mind. I just showed you this portal, how this thing was registered in just a second. I'm going to go back and show a couple slides, and then we'll do a kind of end-to-end demo with that. I got to pick up the pace. Okay, so that was one problem. We talked about authentication. Authentication is really, really hard, and now we're making it a lot easier. And I'll prove that to you in just a minute when we actually build it. The next thing is a lot of those apps asked you for your SkyDrive URL, for your OneDrive URL. Even our newsfeed app has a thing that says enter your newsfeed URL manually. What we're announcing today is a way to solve that problem, which is the Office 365 Discovery Services, again, preview. And what this is for is automatically determining the URL of Office 365 services on behalf of a user. So if you've got a user and they've given you access to their services, there's no more ask them where it is, there's no more try and figure it out, the user profiles, or hacking their domain thing and trying to build together one. You go to this service and you say, hey, I have this token, and this user said I could access their files. Can you tell me where they are? And we'll show you where they are. It supports device apps. It supports websites. It's secured using that same AAD protocol that we're securing all of your data with, so you know it's a secure protocol. And it's serving information about those services that are stored in Azure Active Directory. So today you'll see we're returning you things that are inside of SharePoint, in particular your OneDrive URL and your Exchange URL for your calendar and your mail. But because it's an extensible infrastructure inside of Azure Active Directory, you can expect us to add more and more richness here so that as you access more services over time, you can use this as a directory to find your user's information. All right, so I'm going to demo that real quick. And the way I'm going to demo that is with a really simple Windows 8 app. And this Windows 8 app is going to connect to api.office.com, which is where the Discovery service is hosted. api.office.com/discovery/me/services is the endpoint it's going to hit. And there's a bunch of different steps to this, some of which I can skip. So the first one is, if I don't actually know who this URL is, and I want to figure out if they have an account and if there's an Office 365 account, I have a service for that. So the first one I'll do is I'll type in a username in here, and I'll hit next. And it's going to return information about what type of user that is. So here's the authorization service for that user. Here's the token service, the discovery resource. So I know, based on all this information, this account type here is telling me that this is actually an org ID account type. They have an Office 365 account. Here's where their login endpoint is. If I were already assuming that, I could totally skip that step and go straight on to get authorized, which is part of that same flow that I use to interact with Azure Active Directory to get access to your resources. I do that through this same way. So you can see that I've launched the web auth broker here in Windows 8, which is a way to host this secure web experience for doing logins. I'm actually logging in. I want to point something out. I'm logging in with a different tenant. So this says rob@o365apidemo.onmicrosoft.com. And my other tenant was called junction.onmicrosoft.com. So they're two different tenants. So I built the app with one tenant, and I'm logging in with a different tenant. And I'll tell you why as soon as I log in. So when I log in, what you're going to see is Active Directory is going to prompt me for the same access that was configured inside that portal. It is going to prompt. There we go. It's going to prompt me for the same access that was configured inside that portal. I'll make that a little bit bigger just so people can see. So this is that same Discovery Sample app. Discovery Sample needs permission, and these are all the things that I checked inside that portal. It's automatically creating that UI. I can do Show More. I can see who I'm signed in as and what organization I'm a part of. I'm part of Rob's customer tenant. And I can also see who developed the application. This was published by Rob's developer tenant. The reason that I logged in with a different user is that there's actually a really cool feature in Azure AD, which is that if I have a device app and it's connecting to my own tenant, then we won't even prompt you. We'll say, it's your app connecting to your data, so we're just not going to prompt you. We'll just make sure if the user logged in, we'll give you access to your stuff. You created the app, you're the administrator, you enabled it. But if you want to get access to another customer's data, then you've got to prompt them and get access. So that's why I showed you that. So if you're developing an app and you log in and you wonder, hey, why didn't I see a consent screen? That's why. OK, so I'm going to say OK. What I'm going to get back out the other end is a code that I go get an access token with. You can see this access token here. The access token is a relatively short-lived token I can use to go talk to services and get data from it. It's really pretty. You can read it very easily. And then I have a refresh token here. And the refresh token is that thing that I save in my app if I want to have access on behalf of that user. If I don't want to have that prompt every time they log in, I can hold on to that refresh token, and I can use that refresh token to get access until the user revokes my access. They can go and say, I don't want your app to have access anymore, and then you'll get a message that says you don't have access. So I've got that access token and refresh token, and the next thing I want to do is actually call that discovery service. So I'm going to take that access token and go hit the discovery endpoint, and then you'll see I get back a bunch of URLs here. In particular, I get this my files URL, which is a SharePoint URL, and it has a pointer to my OneDrive. So it has 0365api demo-my.sharepoint.com/personal/rob_0365api demo.com_micro. Can you imagine asking somebody to type that in? It would be awful. And you don't have to do that anymore. You can call the discovery service, and you can say, where are their files? And you can get access to them directly. OK, so that's the discovery service. I'll show you the rest of the stuff about calling an API in a different app. All right, going back to the slides. Anybody think the discovery service is cool? Solve any problems? Awesome. OK. I know. I'm pandering. Zlatko built this application. So you guys should, yeah, that's awesome. Way to go, Zlatko. The next thing, so now you've got access, you've got authentication, you know where the service is, you've got discovery, you've got a pointer to it. But how do you access it? Well, if you talk about the current state of the world, Exchange has a set of SOAP APIs and kind of a couple of different client libraries, and SharePoint has some client libraries and some REST APIs. So it's very different interacting with both those different services. And if you want to create a single application that talks across all Office 365 services, it's kind of a mess. So today we're announcing the Office 365 API preview as well. So once you're authenticated, once you know where this stuff is, you now have a set of simple REST and OData service APIs that span Office 365, that are in SharePoint, they're in Exchange, they're in Azure Active Directory. And in this early preview, we expose files, lists, mail, calendar, and people and groups. And it's available now in preview in SharePoint, Exchange, and AAD. We support Azure AD OAuth for access to it, the same way we do for the discovery service. And you can find those endpoints through discovery. All right, so now I'm going to do an end-to-end demo. I'm going to show you the cool tools the VS guys are working on for supporting these kind of apps. They'll be available in a week or two. And I'm going to start from scratch on this one, first time today. So I'm going to go ahead and create a new project. And I'm not going to create an app for SharePoint. I'm going to create a website. And in particular, I'm going to create an MVC website. So I'm going to call this 0365 API demo. I hope I don't have one called that already. I don't. I'm going to choose MVC. You can choose whatever technology you want. These particular tools work really well against MVC, so I recommend that one as a first choice. I'm going to change authentication to not use any authentication on the website because I'm going to use OAuth to go get to their services. I don't actually care about authenticating them directly on the website. And I'm going to hit OK. And I just have an out-of-the-box ASP.NET MVC website using their template as soon as this is done creating. So this is, you guys have probably seen this a million times before if you created these things, really simple website. And on this machine, I have installed the Office 365 API tools preview that will be available in a couple weeks. And this is what you're going to want if you're going to want to develop either websites, MVC websites, or Windows 8 applications that integrate with Office 365 services. And I'll show you why. If I go to my website and I right click and I say add connected service, you'll see that Office 365 APIs are listed there as a connected service. Now, I haven't gone to the portal. I haven't created any apps or anything like that. I'm starting on this app for the first time here. I'm going to hit sign in. I'm going to log into my developer tenant. And right within the tools, it's going to go and enumerate the services that are available to me. You'll see Active Directory, Exchange, SharePoint. I'm going to start with SharePoint. I'm going to integrate Exchange too. And the first thing it's going to ask me is, what rights do you want? Right within this tool. I don't have to go to the portal. I don't have to go create app IDs and copy them back and forth or anything like that. In this particular case, I want to edit or delete items in all site collections. I'll hit OK. And then it's going to go and get some NuGet packages and some sample code and some components that are really vital for connecting Office 365 services that handle discovery for you, that handle authentication for you, that have some sample renderings of those pages, and it's going to embed them in your project. I'm going to go back and re-enter it. You can go back, you can enter it back to change any sort of references or change your level of access at any point. So I'm going to go back and re-enter it, and I'm going to add Exchange as well. I'm going to say calendars read and mail read. But notice I'm not going to say contacts, so I don't have access to contacts. I'll show you that in a second. And I'll hit OK. And I'll show you what it added to my application. It added this Exchange sample controller, this SharePoint sample controller, and this Office 365 common controller, and then added a couple views, Exchange sample and SharePoint sample. Anything with sample in it is stuff that's really just a sample to show you how it works. You can delete those if you don't want to use it. The rest of it is stuff that we think you want to use in your projects. So I'm going to do one real quick thing in the shared view. And I'm going to call this, I'm going to change the name of this app. Where's the name of the app? The name of the app to O365 API demos. And I'm going to get rid of about and contact, and I'm going to put in SharePoint. We'll go to the index. And I want to use the SharePoint sample controller. This is the one that came with it. And I'll do the Exchange sample here, and the index, and Exchange, if I can spell Exchange right. So I'm going to hit save. And I'm just going to go ahead and hit F5. And I haven't really written any code. I mean, I changed the links, so I kind of wrote code. But I didn't really write any code. I connected to my Office 365 service, and you'll see what I get. So I get this SharePoint and Exchange link here. I'm going to hit SharePoint. I automatically get my OAuth redirect to go get a token, because I don't have a token yet. I'm going to sign in with my developer tenant. And remember, I won't get a prompt because I'm developing the same tenant that I'm consenting in, so it's going to automatically consent me. You can see I get a code back here to the app. And then the app's going and interacting with my Shared with Everyone folder on OneDrive. So this is my Office 365 account. Without writing any code, I now have an app that's accessing the files in my OneDrive through OAuth and getting them back and embedding them inside the application. And then I can go to Exchange. I can do Calendar. I don't actually know if I have much on my calendar on this account. I do. The SPC App Awards tonight. And Mail. And I can see the mail there. And if I go back, remember I didn't ask for contacts. Remember. So just to prove to you that I won't get access, I get access denied because I didn't ask for contacts. So that's all integrated without writing any code. So that's very cool. Got good applause. But we're going to do much better than that. We're going to do much better than that. I'm going to go really fast because I have like 8 minutes left. So I'm going to add a new controller. And I'm going to do an MVC5 controller. I'm going to call it Office. I'm going to call it O365 API Demo Controller. And what I'm going to build here is actually a little mini API Explorer that's going to just show a bunch of different examples of APIs that you can call on the Office 365 APIs. And I'm going to do a snippet here. There's a bunch of snippets. O365 APIs. The first thing I want to do is actually define the model. So I'm going to define this O365 API demo class. And this class just has things like a primary key to index it. It has a service type, which I actually need an enum for. So let me make sure and do that enum real quick. Service type enum, which just says whether the demo is against SharePoint or Exchange. And then fix this reference. And then it says what HTTP method the demo is going to use, what request URL pattern it's going to have, what the process request URL is, and I'll explain that in a second, what the body of the request is, if there's a body, what the response is when it comes back, and what the description of the API call is. So this is just a data model that we're using to describe the APIs. And then in the controller, I know that this is for people who are MVC purists, I'm actually putting the model right inside the controller. So you can yell at me afterwards. I apologize. I'm actually going to put the data right inside there. So I just have an array of these O365 demo, request demo classes. And each one of them defines a different request. So this one says retrieve a list of all files in the user's OneDrive for business. And then I put this request pattern here. This is as simple as the API is. So we've got this new files API in SharePoint. If you want to get the files that are in somebody's OneDrive, just go to their OneDrive and you do _API/files, and you'll get the files. Doesn't get much simpler than that. If you want to get the top two files, you can do that. So there's a bunch of examples in here. We've got everything from writing a simple file to the Shared with Everyone folder. So this is going to write a text file to the Shared with Everyone folder, /files/add. You put the path in, whether you want to overwrite it. Pretty simple. I'm going to post this as a text file. This one deletes that file. I've got a couple of examples for Exchange. So this is retrieve the first 50 calendar events, so /me/calendar/events. That's pretty simple. And then this is to get to the first messages in the inbox, /me/inbox/messages. There's a bunch more of these. There's actually a bunch of really good detail in another session this week that I'll point you to in a minute. All right, so what I'm going to do is go really, really fast. I'm running out of time. I'm going to insert this method for ensuring service info. So this is basically saying, hey, I don't want to just have this request pattern. I actually want to know where the user's Exchange server is, where their OneDrive is. So I actually want to replace this thing with the actual API endpoint. And I want to do that inside this method. I've got this, I got to resolve this task so I can use threading here. What I'm going to do is call into this Office 365 service info class, which came with my app. I'm not defining this one here. It actually came as part of those tools. I'm doing get SharePoint OneDrive service info async. That's going to call discovery. I'm doing get Exchange service info async. That's also going to call discovery. And then I'm making sure I have an access token for both. And if I don't, I'm going to redirect it to the authentication page. So that one's pretty simple. The next thing I want to do is I want a couple of methods that take the service info that I got back, and actually process them into the demo URLs. So I'm basically going to take, depending on the service type that I'm using, I'm going to grab the service info either from Exchange or from SharePoint, and I'm just going to do a string.format on the request URL pattern and save that into the processed request URL. And then the last two things I'm going to do, I'm going to put the body of this index in here, and the body of the index is really pretty simple. O365 APIs, index controller body. All I'm going to do is first ensure that service info, and that's async, so I need to make this method async. And if it returns that it needs to do a redirect, I'm going to return that. Otherwise, I'm going to put the primary key in there based on where in the index they are, where in the array they are. I'm going to process the demo URLs, and I'm going to return that view to the view. I'm going to go real quick and add a view to this. It's going to be an index view, so I'm going to make it a list. And I'm going to use that O365 API demo class to generate it. I want this to be really simple. I'm actually just going to show the description. I'm not going to show any other stuff in the index page. So get rid of everything else. And then I don't want edit, details, delete. I just want a single link. And I want that to execute. So I'm going to have a details controller here. And it's going to pass in that primary key so the details controller knows which one to execute. So we finish that one. And then the last thing we're going to do in here is we're going to go to O365 APIs, details controller method. I'll walk through this one really fast. Basically, all this thing is doing is, again, making sure that I have the service info first, grabbing the right demo from the argument that I passed in, making sure I have the right service info, making sure I have the right HTTP method, and then using the same sample code that was used in the SharePoint sample and the Exchange sample to make a request to the API based on the URL. I'm just passing in this HTTP method and the demo processed URL, and then I'm passing in the demo request body if there is one. Then I'm getting back the response, and I'm just setting it on the demo response property. And if there's not a response, I'm just doing an empty string. So I'm going to make a real quick view for this guy. We've got 2 minutes left. I promise I'll go as fast as I can. Details. Model class, O365 API request demo. I don't want to show the primary key. I don't want to show the request URL pattern. I just want to show the actual request URL or the actual process request URL. And then I want to show the description at the top. And then I'm going to get rid of this edit link. A few other pretty things that I can do to make it a little bit prettier. And I'm going to go into this layout. I'm going to skip the pretty things and just do O365 API demo index O365 API demo. And then I'm going to run it. We're going to see if it actually worked. Oh, man, there's one other thing I forgot to do. Ah, got to go fast. So in here, I don't want to actually show, in this details thing, I don't want to actually show the response body. I would like to actually show some scripts, I'd actually like to show some pretty printed stuff. So I'm going to go to O365 APIs. This is just calling json.stringify on the response. And then I'm going to put in an ID here so that the string knows what to replace for response JSON. OK, I replaced that. I got this running app. I go to O365 API demo. I log in. I've got a list of all of these APIs that I want to call. I'm going to hit execute. And you'll see I'm actually saying retrieve a list of files in OneDrive for Business. Here's the request URL that I called, completed with discovery. And here's the actual response that I got from this API. I can call a couple other ones. Oops. I can call a couple other ones, like write a simple text file. If I write that text file, I can go over to SharePoint. I can see the text file is there. I can call delete a text file. I can call, you know, read the user's mail. So I've got a really simple little API explorer here built on stage and produced for you guys. So I appreciate that you guys think that's awesome. But when I say I produced it for you guys, I really mean I produced it for you guys. So I'm going to do a couple of really quick things. I'm going to go back to the service. I'm going to go back into my Azure Active Directory tenant. And I'm actually going to live right now. I'm going to publish. I'm going to import a profile and publish to an Azure website that I've got up, O365 APIs demo. Got to make sure and erase what's up there right now, otherwise it will fail. I've done that before. And I'm going to go, you can see this O365 API demo. The tool has actually automatically created that thing. I'm going to click on it. I'm going to switch over to the HTTPS URL. Oh, I messed up the web config. I accidentally dragged and dropped that into the wrong spot. Let me do one more publish. So this is live on Azure. I'm going to use HTTPS here. And then the one other thing I have to do is right now, because I developed this using those tools, it's actually configured to be a single tenant application, so I'm the only one who can log into it, or people in my tenant. I'm actually going to switch it to allow multi-tenant, so anybody can log into this site with their Office 365 credentials. If you've got one, you can go ahead and do it. I'm going to paste in that published URL as a valid reply URL, and I'm going to hit save. And then I'm going to go log in using a different tenant. You'll see that I'm going to get prompted just like you will if you visit this site. It's going to say, read your calendars, read your mail, edit or delete items in all site collections. You see it's published by Rob's developer tenant. I'm signed as Rob customer's tenant. I'll hit OK. Don't worry, I just published this to Azure. It'll get super fast, I promise. And then I can actually run these API demos live in Azure against my live Office 365 site. And I'm not the only one who can do it. I would encourage you guys to jot that down in this URL, o365apisdemo.azurewebsites.net. You can go, if you have an Office 365 account, go to the site, log in, play around with the API calls, look at the data, learn something on there. I promise later in the week when I have a little bit more time than right now, I'll add a bunch more API calls there, and I'm actually going to put up all the snippets that I used in my talk today on that site, so you can download them directly from that site. And I'm way over time. I want to say two things before you go. One is there's a session on integrating mail and calendar experiences within Office 365 later this week, SPC 379. It's going to go into a lot of detail about mail and calendar APIs and a lot of detail about the auth stuff. I also want to do this announcement. We are announcing the Office 365 SDK for Android, which allows you to build Android devices. So we have the Windows experience that were tools. This is an SDK. It's open source. It's a project on GitHub, and it handles files, lists, and mail. There's another session later this week on that. I won't do the demo because I'm out of time. But there's a session this week that goes into a bunch of detail about the Android SDK and mobile solutions in general, SBC 373. The roadmap there is that the Android SDK is just the first of many. We're going to do a bunch more SDKs for device and web platforms. The last thing I want to just say, obviously, there are a ton of features. I didn't even get through them all. There's a ton of great sessions this week to cover all this stuff. Check it out. And please, please, please provide us feedback, both in the speaker forum. Let me know how I can do this talk better next time, other than doing it shorter. And let us know what features we can do and how we can do features better. One other thing I want to mention before you go, there was a keynote demo for K2 that Rob and Brian had a little bit of trouble with. I would highly encourage you to go check that out. Tuesday morning at 10:45 a.m. in SPC 2000, we're going to do that same keynote demo so you guys can actually see it working. All right. Thanks very much, guys. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope it was useful.